Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello, everybody, to EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. I welcome everybody to our first episode on sleep-wake disorders. My name is Thomas Berger. I'm a chair of the Department of Neurology here in Vienna, Austria. And by the way, also chair of the Scientific Committee of the European Academy of Neurology. But more importantly, today's guest moderator, together with Dr. Ambra Stefani, sleep-wake disorder specialist from the Medical University in Innsbruck, Austria, and also together with our special guest, which is Evelina, and now I have to be very careful in spelling your name, Pajediene. I hope I got it correctly. And she's a neurologist and, of course, also expert in sleep medicine, working at the neurological department at the Hospital of Lithuanian University of Health Sciences in Vilnius in Lithuania. And she's also engaged in EAN. Very strongly as the co-chair of the EAN Scientific Panel on Sleep-Wake Disorders. So welcome, everybody, and I will now, as a blank neurologist with regard to sleep-wake disorders, I will now hand over to Ambra and to pose her first questions to Evelina.
Hello, everybody, and hello also Evelina also from my side. So it's very nice for me to start this series of podcasts with sleep-wake disorders. And we know that there are really several different sleep complaints. Almost everyone experienced at least one in his life, his or her life. And what is relevant for neurologists? What kind of sleep complaints should be considered neurological?
So first of all, hello, Ambra. Hello, dear Thomas, and hello, everybody. Thanks for inviting me to speak about this important subject. Answering to the first question, I think the main complaints that neurologists should be aware about related to sleep is daytime sleepiness. When the patient is feeling sleepy and fatigued, we really need to know how to interact with these questions and actually differentiate sleepiness and fatigue. Also, sleepiness could be really expressed as involuntary attacks of sleep, and then we can have a symptom for narcolepsy. Of course, we should be aware about the arousals during nighttime sleep, so some awakenings that could be related to breathing problems, some parasomnias, even epilepsy episodes. So we need to differentiate those causes of arousals and awakenings. Moreover, we need to think about different movements during sleep. So they could be related to the dream content, or they could be related to the limbs, like periodic limb movements. We also need to think about some strange paroxysms happening during sleep that can also be differentiated between parasomnias and nocturnal epilepsy.
Thank you, Evelina. So there are really a lot of diseases and complaints and sleep disorders are sometimes unfortunately neglected in the general neurological education. So would you like maybe to provide a brief overview for general neurologists of the main sleep-wake disorders, maybe providing a very brief description of them?
Yeah, I think that's important because this is the same branch as during night. So we can have many various sleep disorders, but we can roughly divide it them to kind of seven main groups, I should say. So those are already mentioned, and kind of most common ones. One of the most common ones could be breathing-related sleep disorders, such as obstructive sleep apnea, central sleep apnea, and other more rare types of breathing problems. So describing very shortly, this is pauses of breathing during sleep, also that can be led by snoring, some coughing, even choking, and sometimes we need also to think maybe they are also a symptom of some kind of different paroxysm, as these apneas are causing desaturation. So that's why we feel sleepy and fatigued during daytime. So we can have daytime sleepiness as a consequence of sleep-related breathing disorders. So this is shortly about apneas. And then we can also have insomnia, that is also a very common sleep disorder. And the most challenging problem is chronic insomnia, when we have problems with remaining sleepy or sleeping during nighttime, or remaining or not awakening in the night, or not awakening too early in the morning. And it lasts at least 3 nights per week, at least 3 months. So then we have a problem with chronic insomnia. So this is common sleep disorder, and this could also be a part of other mental or neurological disorders, I should say. Then we should think about really neurological sleep disorders, such as narcolepsy and other central hypersomnias. So speaking about narcolepsy, we can have two main types of narcolepsy till now. So it could be with cataplexy or without. Cataplexy is the rapid loss of muscle tone that could be only focal, like facial cataplexy, or it could be generalized when we have the drop of the person experiencing cataplexy. And also we have really severe sleep attacks. It's not like sleep apnea caused sleepiness. It's more severe, and the patient could not resist these kind of attacks. And then we can have some other symptoms, such as sleep paralysis, really vivid dreams, and fragmented night sleep. And in addition to narcolepsy, we can have idiopathic hypersomnia and other secondary hypersomnias related to other neurological disorders. Going forward, we have also not really a sleep disorder, but a movement disorder related to sleep. So it's restless leg syndrome, really common one. It happens before sleep. Anyhow, it can really affect the way we fell asleep, and it can also awaken the patient. And restless leg syndrome can be also kind of often led by periodic limb movements during sleep, when we have periodicity of mainly legs moving, twitching during nighttime sleep, and also causing arousals and diminishing the sleep quality. And we can, in this group with movement-related sleep disorders, we can have even more, like bruxism and some more, but I won't go that much into details. And then moving forward, we have a big group of parasomnias. So we can have deep sleep-related parasomnias that happen during non-REM sleep. And then we can have REM-related parasomnias. The most common one is REM sleep behavior disorder. That could also be one of the first symptoms of neurodegenerative diseases, such as Parkinson's and others. So this is expressed by enacting the dream content when the patient is not relaxed during REM sleep and actually is kicking, twitching, shouting, boxing during sleep. And non-REM parasomnias are the ones that are happening during deep sleep. So it could be sleepwalking, sleep talking, something actually when the patient is already going out of the bed during the paroxysm. And this is important group because sometimes we need to differentiate them from epileptic seizures and nocturnal epilepsy episodes. Moving forward, we have this sleep-wake rhythm disorders, or we are calling sometimes circadian rhythm disorders. So the example could be a shift work sleep disorder when we have disrupted sleep rhythm because of long-lasting shift work. This could also be delayed sleep phase disorder that is common among teenagers when we have our rhythm really delayed, or advanced sleep phase disorder that is more common among elderly. So I think these are the main ones I have described.
So having heard that, Evelina, I think that we as neurologists are quite privileged by conversation with our patients, and I think this is of paramount importance to get on track of a correct and timely diagnosis. Now, having heard this broad spectrum of sleep-wake disorders you just described, could you give us a brief overview? What should a neurologist, a general neurologist in practice or in an outpatient clinic, ask a patient with sleep complaints, or even if we doubt that there are some sleep complaints, what should we ask the patient in a brief way, either to identify the one or other differential diagnosis, or then, of course, also to refer to a specialized center?
Yeah, that's a very good point. We at least need to ask about the sleep quality. If the patient is having a good sleep quality and is feeling refreshed when waking in the morning, we can, if going precisely deeply into the sleep complaints, we need to ask the main questions about breathing. So if the patient is experiencing breathing pauses or snoring, or if the relatives are hearing those pauses or snoring. And then we can ask if the patient is sleepy during daytime, because this could be the consequence of some awakenings during nighttime. So if the patient is sleepy or having sleep attacks, this is also an important point. Then awakenings, if the patient is awakening, and what could be the causes of those awakenings? Is this frequent rush to the bathroom, or is it some dreaming content, or is it just insomnia or some muscle movements? So I think these are the main ones that we should at least ask, and then suspect at least the most common sleep disorders, as I already mentioned.
So apart from taking history in this more general way, or also probably asking in a more, let's say, inquisitory manner, do I need some special skills or tools to diagnose a neurological sleep-wake disorder?
I think what really helps is the relative, because the relative's interview, because patient is sometimes not actually reporting the symptoms as apneas or some kind of paroxysms during sleep. So this is very good to have relative's interview, and also sometimes even videos about the paroxysm. Additionally, we can use some more precise tools like sleep scales and sleep scores. We have some uploaded in the EIN webpage as well that could be also used not even for the research purpose, but also in really the clinical routine. So these are the scales for sleepiness, for apnea severity, for restless legs, and for differentiating parasomnias and epilepsy. We can also ask the patient to fill in the sleep diary that could give us more information about the sleep-wake rhythm and sleep hygiene. And then we can move to more precise sleep diagnostics, such as polysomnography, that is like a golden standard for sleep diagnostics till now. Also, we can use actigraphy or some kind of similar approach when we can evaluate more objectively the sleep-wake rhythm and arousals. And if we are speaking about narcolepsy and hypersomnias, we also would like to do the multiple sleep latency test, that is required test for differentiating and diagnosing hypersomnias.
Thank you very much for this brief overview and also, let's say, support for our daily practice. I have two additional questions, one more specific, one more general. The specific question regards the fact next episode, we will welcome also a patient. So how important are patient-related outcomes for sleep-wake disorders?
I think this is extremely important because it's always about the patients. So sleep, getting more sleep quality is one of the main criteria and aim for the daytime functioning of the patient, any neurological or other patient, because sleep apnea or other bad quality sleep problems can also increase the risk of other neurological diseases, for example, stroke. So I think the importance of sleep should be really discussed and touched during any neurological patient interview and discussing the treatment options and non-pharmacological interventions.
And now my special the general question, because you mentioned several times sleep quality. So what is meant by good sleep quality? This is my first part. The second part is there are rumors all the time that people need 10 hours of sleep and others only 4 hours of sleep. So what is true about that?
I think there are some norms about the recommended sleep. They shouldn't be that strict because, as you mentioned, it's more important that sleep itself should be qualified. So if we have 10 hours of sleep, but we have many awakenings and we have breathing problems, desaturations, or other disruptions, so it's not a high quality sleep. It's important to have about, depending on the age, we still have some norms. So we are telling like for the middle-aged person to have at least 7-8 hours of sleep. And we are arguing this because we need the sleep to go through all the cycles during the nighttime and to preserve all the function that sleep has. So this is the qualified sleep, and how we can suspect that the sleep is of bad quality if the patient is not feeling refreshed during daytime and having fatigue or sleepiness during daytime. 4 hours of sleep and 10 hours of sleep, we have a short population, like really a minor percent of short and long sleepers, but that's really some exclusions. But mainly we do recommend this medium of 8 hours of sleep anyhow.
Thank you very much. So I think we can conclude that a good sleep quality is important for brain health, right?
That's right.
Perfect. So I would like to thank you, Evelina Bayadiene, for giving us the insight to the basics of sleep-wake disorders in this very brief and concise way. I hope our auditorium enjoyed this teaser to get more interested and also to think about sleep disorders in the general practice. I would like to thank also Ambra Stefani for, of course, the very qualified questions you posed to Evelina. And thank you for listening and stay on air, because the next week we will welcome a patient. And I think that will be highly interesting to get it not only from the expertise, theoretical view, but also from the personal view of being affected with a sleep disorder. See you soon and hear you soon, especially.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EAN Cast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.